Coming up on this week's book show, Jacqueline Woodson is the New York Times bestselling and National Book Award winning author of Another Brooklyn and Brown Girl Dreaming. Her latest novel, Red at the Bone, tells how an unexpected teenage pregnancy pulls together two families from different social classes and exposes the private hopes, disappointments, and longings that can bind or divide us from each other. Jacqueline Woodson on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Jacqueline Woodson is the New York Times bestselling and National Book Award winning author of Another Brooklyn and Brown Girl Dreaming. Her latest novel, Red at the Bone, tells how an unexpected teenage pregnancy pulls together two families from different social classes and exposes the private hopes, disappointments, and longings that can bind or divide us from each other. Moving forward and backward in time, Woodson's powerful new novel uncovers the role that history and community have played in the experiences, decisions, and relationships of these families and in the life of the new child. Woodson is a four-time National Book Award finalist, a four-time Newbery Honor winner, a two-time NAACP Image Award winner, and a two-time Coretta Scott King Award winner. Again, the new novel is Red at the Bone, and it's a pleasure to welcome Jacqueline Woodson to this week's book show. Very nice to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
A great pleasure. This novel is beautiful. I'm curious as to how it started for you, as to what you wanted to address and how the story came to you.
I think the main seed of Red at the Bone was the Tulsa Massacre and the fact that I didn't know anything about it until I was in my 20s. When I think about history and how much of it gets lost, just because it doesn't get told and retold and retold, it kind of made me really want to go back and tell that story, but also talk about the history of Black wealth and the lack thereof and the markers in where it faltered, where things happened or people did things to us that caused us to not have any money, basically. Mm. And with that came, you know, education and all the ways in which history has had an impact on community.
When it comes to the novel, the Tulsa Massacre is something that one of the characters just doesn't mention, doesn't want to share that story with the younger generation.
Yes, and I think that's true for a lot of people with PTSD. I think we're, especially when you look at what people have to leave behind or how they have to leave a place or a thing behind, and the fact that the fear is bringing it on again, right? You don't talk about it and it won't ever happen again. And so then people start believing, asking, well, did it really actually happen? So back to that idea of remembering history so that we don't relive it in that same way. It was really important for me to show the sides of what it means to both remember and to choose not to remember.
So when the book opens, we meet a 16-year-old girl by the name of Melody, and she is having a coming-of-age ceremony, and it's at this point that we we learn about her mother and how of what her pregnancy brought, and it brings us back. And as I said in the introduction, it brings us back and forth in time. Did you know right away that it would be told in that fashion?
It's a good question. I knew that there were going to be lots of people telling this story. And I knew that the story was going to span lots of generations. I didn't know how I was going to do it. And it took a lot of writing and rewriting and reading it out loud and drawing maps and drawing timelines and trying to figure out the connection between the past and the present. So I didn't know what it was going to be. And for a long time, it was a hot mess because for a long time, it was also really scary because I think that's the thing about writing is you're starting from a part of you thinks of as nothing. And you're trying to create something that makes sense. And it wasn't making sense to me. And I didn't understand why.
And I guess I'm curious, in the writing, as you say, there were a lot of lines and of how you were going to tell it and laying it out. So do you write it in a fashion of that is linear in the writing, or did you have to go back and sort of reassemble?
I didn't write it in a linear way. I wrote it pretty much. When we're talking about, I'm trying to look back on the mini drafts, and I wrote it a lot of ways, and none of them were ever linear, because I knew that it was not a linear narrative. I don't think anybody's life is a linear narrative, and I knew that looking at ourselves in the present meant taking into account the past, and so I had to think of it as looking at many screens at once, right? And here is Tulsa, and here is prep school, and here is Oberlin, and here is Aubrey as a little boy walking along the water with his mother, and just kind of figuring out, like, okay, at some point, all of these people are going to intersect and come together somehow, or they already have, and why, and how, and when, and all of those questions.
You were talking just a moment ago as you were explaining this as far as time and events, whereas it really is about the person who's telling that particular chapter. As you start a chapter, it takes you a little bit to figure out, oh, who is telling us this now?
Mm-hmm. And that was intentional. I mean, I think what I like to do as a reader is not feel like I'm watching television when I'm reading a book. I want to meet the author halfway and have a sense of what it is they're trying to whisper to me and how my own experience, what my own experience brings to that. And so I could have had, you know, chapter headings, Melody, Aubrey, Sabie, but I wasn't going to do it that way. And it takes you maybe a line or two to know exactly where you are in the story. But once you are, you're full in.
When it comes to Iris and Aubrey, they really are, would you agree that they're at the center? I mean, they're really, that's the story told here.
I don't know. I see. It depends on how you're looking at the story, right? It depends on the gaze, and it depends on who you are. I think a lot of people see Iris as the center. I think a lot of people see Sabie. You know, people see Melody. Yep. I think there's a way in which Po' Boy is very centered in a quiet way. Even Kathy Marie, there's something that's very kind of grounding about her character for me. And also... kind of muted in a way that feels powerful. So, I mean, she resonates. So is the person who is the central character, is that the person who is full, you know, front and center, or is it the person who you're still thinking about at the end of the book?
So Kathy Marie is Aubrey's mother, and also the one who is ultimately teaching Iris after she becomes pregnant at such a young age.
Yes.
We learn then, and Iris learns, that the power of that education and that idea of Aubrey's mother really opening the gate to Iris to go off into a world and learn much more is fascinating.
Yeah, I really didn't know that Kathy Marie would play the role that she played until she played it, until I got to the draft where I figured out, because, you know, there's that saying that sometimes the story knows more than you do about what it's trying to say. And I felt that way about Kathy Marie in terms of, like, I knew she was Aubrey's mom. I knew that she had an affair with a jazz man. I knew that there was a deep sadness to her. But beyond that, for a long time, I didn't know why she was there until I did.
Because initially she's somewhat dismissive of Iris, or is dismissive of Iris, at least skeptical. And mm-hmm. but Aubrey knows that Iris can be helped by her.
Yes, and that Iris brings something to Kathy Marie. I mean, I think so many of the relationships work both ways. And she is, what I see in that scene where they first meet is Kathy Marie really seeing Iris and, you know, really seeing the complexity that is Iris. And I think because of that, they ended up forging this deep bond.
What is it about Iris that I think that you were curious about, of that longing and wanting to get away from her situation as a young mother, but also interested in literature, interested in college, and in choosing that college wanted to get as far away from her family as possible?
There's a line in the book where she says, you know, I was only 15. I wasn't even anybody yet. And right. I think that the fact that she was so young when she had Melody and had this idea that that was it, you know, I'm pregnant and I'm going to have a baby and I'm, you know, I'm going to keep this baby. And then realizing that motherhood extended beyond infancy, and then having this wake-up call, like, this is the rest of my life, and realizing that she didn't want her life to look that way and to be that way. And so in creating her character, it was, of course, an exploration of youth and motherhood and what does it mean to want to step out of a narrative, and in her case, the narrative of being Iris living in Park Slope with her, you know, family and raising this baby. And what does it mean to change your mind, especially as a mother, and want to go on and have your life? So I think I know I was trying to create in her that kind of juxtaposition of who she was trying to become, even though she didn't know that who that person was yet, and what society expected her to be.
Tell us about the men of this novel.
There's Aubrey, who is Iris's boyfriend and eventually Melody's father. There is Po' Boy, who is Iris's dad, and there's Malcolm, who is Melody's best friend. So they all are, you know, Red at the Bone is a story about family and community and what it means to be becoming and not fully formed yet, or, you know, in the case of the book Red at the Bone, still trying to figure out who you are. And I think in the case of the men, that Malcolm kind of knows who he is. Aubrey is figuring out a lot of stuff, and Po' Boy is moving toward the end of his life and understands deeply so much about his daughter Iris and about love and life and family and marriage. And I think what I really love about them all is how firmly planted their feet are on the ground, and just how much they kind of care about each other. I was really trying to get that love on the page, and warts and all, to show that this family is going to continue in some way, shape, or form from, you know, no matter what happens. And when we look at back at Tulsa, that's what happened, right? People had to keep on keeping on even after everything was destroyed.
Jacqueline Woodson is our guest. The name of the new novel is Red at the Bone. It is why I asked the question about the male characters, because it seems like there is such empathy, that you have such empathy for them.
I love them. Yeah. I mean, I love all my characters. I don't tend to create characters I don't fall in love with. I mean, even the villains. When I'm writing about a character who is not the greatest person on the planet, there has to be somewhere where there is empathy in my coming to that character, because else I'm going to create a caricature, right? I have to know that character deeply and feel something for them so that the reader can.
But back to your idea of family, and maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think I felt a villain in this book.
Oh, no, there isn't one in this book.
Yeah, because it is that family, and they all have their roles and their support and their place.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that idea of family that you find interesting of exploring, and obviously the dynamics? And then, of course, we can talk about the class dynamic as well.
You know, families, we all have one, no matter what they look like, right? And I think that growing up, that we were kind of spoon-fed this idea of this quote-unquote nuclear family as the quote-unquote norm. And through most of the books I've written, every book I've written, I've tried to explore some semblance of family. What does it mean to be a family? And it's important to me. I mean, I think historically, the Black family in media and film in the world has not always been the most positively represented family. And for me, I have a deep respect for the Black family and for all families. I mean, I think it's a struggle. It brings every single emotion you've ever had to the forefront, and it's something that we reckon with all of our lives.
Jacqueline Woodson's new novel is Red at the Bone. The book is published by Riverhead Books. When you were talking about Tulsa and saying that that is something that you wanted to explore, how much did you know about it going in, and what was that exploration like?
I knew that a whole community had been destroyed. I knew that bombs were involved. I knew that it was had something to do with an incident on an elevator. And that's about all I knew. And so I just started reading and doing some research and finding out what happened in that community and how it happened, and got to where I needed to be to tell that part of the story.
And were you interested in how trauma is handed down through the decades, and how it affects us consciously and subconsciously?
Yes, and I've always explored that. I feel like we don't take that into account enough. That and genetic memory. I think about what it means to be in this country as the descendants of enslaved people and the descendants of people across the ocean who've had their own kinds of trauma. And what does that mean for me, Jacqueline Woodson, in the world right now, and how much of that I carry with me? And in Red at the Bone, I was definitely looking at how trauma informs our daily lives, whether we're aware of it or not.
I've heard you talk about this, and I'm interested in just this, given this political climate, of how your work has been affected by it, and does it give you of what opportunity you like to take as a result to talk about such issues as race and class?
Well, I've always talked about race and class long before this particular political climate. When you look at many, many of my other books written for young people, you know, it's there,
right,
as you know, Joe. So I don't feel like it's different for me in that way. The urgency has always been there. I think in this country, it's definitely magnified for some people. For me, it's much more about self-care and about doing the work I need to do to stay sane, and remembering history and remembering that we've survived worse. I mean, we survived enslavement. We survived Jim Crow. We survived the Tulsa massacres. You know, we survived Chicago 1919. And just looking at the ways in which I have to constantly say to myself, we can get through this too. I can get through this too. Our families can get through this too. And using history as a tool for knowing where we are right now.
But it does give you an opportunity for, in the writing of the book, to have a jumping off point for a discussion, to allow the reader to learn things and to discuss things.
Yeah, I hope every book does. I think it's I'd like to think that that's what books do. They begin the conversation, and they make the conversation easier sometimes to have or to begin. I think especially with talking to people that we don't always feel comfortable talking to. I mean, bringing up the subject of the Tulsa massacre, it's probably hard for some people, and bringing it up in the context of Red at the Bone maybe makes it a little easier, but I don't know. I don't know how much we need easier right now, because the work ahead of us is so hard.
Right. And we don't know what that work is necessarily going to entail.
Mm-mm.
But if we are more comfortable with the issues, that is important.
Yeah, and if we are more comfortable in having the dialogues, but getting people to the point of being comfortable with having the dialogues is its own journey.
In that journey and writing about it, I'm curious as you say, you've been writing about these issues for a long time. What was it about the, especially in writing for young adults, is there a different, for want of a better term, a pressure or a responsibility in writing for children that either dissipates or is less so in writing for adults?
No, writing for young people is different for me only in the age of the protagonist, right? If I'm writing if I'm writing a middle grade novel, that child is somewhere between 10 and 12, and they stay that age for all of the book mostly. So when you look at something, of course, like Another Brooklyn, August, who is telling the story, is in her 30s, but the whole book is about her childhood, right, about those teen years. If she had told that story as a teenager, it would have been a young adult book, but she's telling it as an adult. And so it's about the voice, right? It's about who's telling the story. So when you look at something like Red at the Bone, we have Melody telling her story, but we also have we also have Aubrey, and we have Iris, and we have Po' Boy and Sabie. So it is an adult narrative.
in choosing those adults to tell the story, and when you had your stable of characters and you said, you know, you're fond and of all of them, are there characters that don't quite make it, that just aren't fully formed and then they go away?
There was at one point there was a character that I decided to leave out of the book, and one character that Slip Rock, the character of Slip Rock, who's the crack dealer in the neighborhood. He was an interesting character to me, and what ends up in the book about him is a very shortened form because I had him at the juvenile detention center. You know, I had the scene of him actually getting shot. And I realized with the rewriting that he didn't need to be, he wasn't a part of this family. He was a choice that Aubrey did not make. And that's what I needed to show. I needed to show him in respect to his connection with Aubrey, and we didn't need his whole life.
Tell me about your use of italics.
It's mainly aesthetic. I don't like quotation marks. I think they break the dream of fiction. I think there's something softer to the language when it just kind of shifts that way, as opposed to quotation marks telling the reader, now someone is speaking. So for me, as I said, as I've said before, I what the words look like on the page is very important to me, as well as how they sound when you read them out loud. And I feel like quotation marks in my head have some kind of sound to them. It kind of feels like a needle scratching a record. So I just, I don't like them. I used to use them in my earlier books because I didn't know I couldn't. And then when I started experimenting with how I write, I decided I didn't need them.
And it's interesting because it can often come maybe just one word in a paragraph, and we know that it's being spoken, and it's a fascinating way. It seems to make it go. You use the analogy of a scratch, but it does seem to make things go much smoother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's Yeah, it's terribly aesthetic. I mean, even when I'm reading other books, it kind of stops me for a moment. And again, I think you really want that flow. I'm also, you know, kind of in that place between poetry and fiction, right? That the language is very important to me. And part of the flow of that language is, again, how those words look on the page.
The name of the new novel is Red at the Bone. It is published by Riverhead Books. Jacqueline Woodson, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thanks, Joe. Great talking to you again.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Red at the Bone, published by Riverhead. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.